Welcome to this episode of SDI Encounters, a podcast from SDI, the home of spiritual companionship. I'm Matt Whitney. On this podcast, we share stories and conversations around spiritual care, companionship, and contemplative practice across a diverse range of traditions and experiences. Spiritual companions support others on their spiritual journeys through life. Spiritual companions are welcoming and present with those they companion, listening and responding without judgment. And spiritual companions are contemplative and honor silence as a spiritual practice. You can learn more about our work at our website, sdiworld.org. If you're enjoying this podcast and you want to help us share and spread the word about the life-giving practice of spiritual companionship, you can help us out by subscribing to this podcast through your favorite app. You could give us a like or even write us a review. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in finding a spiritual companion, please check out our resource on our website, the Seek and Find Guide, a database of over 7,000 spiritual directors, chaplains, and life coaches from around the world who are available to companion with you on your own spiritual journey. The Seek and Find Guide is available on our website, sdiworld.org. These next two podcast episodes that we're releasing revolve around a conversation between SDI staff and two curators of the Emergence Network. You can learn more about their work at emergencenetwork.org. Bio Akomolafe will be familiar to some of you. He was a keynote speaker at our annual conference in March 2019. He also recently facilitated an SDI webinar. He was joined by co-curator Giordi Rosales, our executive director, Reverend Seifu Anil Singh Malaris, and director of events and programs, Frederica Helmier. So this conversation came on the drive home from a retreat that they were having. So there's a little bit of automobile noise in the background, FYI. I also debriefed this conversation with Frederica. And by doing so, I hope that we're able to frame this conversation that they are having. Having listened to these conversations, I am contemplating an exploration of the boundaries of deep listening, finding new avenues for being in the world, how to live, how to die, and how to allow for things to die well. Okay, so Frederica, you just returned from, well, not just returned, but you were recently on a retreat with Reverend Seifu and Bio Akomolafe and one of his co-conspirators. And I don't know who that is.
Giordi Rosales.
Okay.
Yes, so the four of us went to this log cabin castle on Whidbey Island, which is just off the coast of Seattle. And we spent a couple days together exploring some really interesting potential collaborations that are coming down the pipe for SDI and the Emergence Network. So
okay.
Bio, as a lot of our listeners may know, he's been a keynote speaker. He's done webinars and podcasts for SDI in the past. He is the co-founder of this thing called the Emergence Network. And Giordi is also involved in this project. And it is hard to explain what the Emergence Network is, because in their words, there's not really the proper language yet in English or in our sort of contemporary lexicon to kind of get at what they're getting at. So it's hard. You have to kind of approach it from a couple different angles. But it's worth checking out the website. They are essentially proposing that we address the troubles of the world today in a really different way than we have. And that different way involves completely rethinking things like definitions of terms and where knowledge even comes from and what we're sort of even allowed to consider, like the boundaries of epistemology or thought. They are trying to get at alternative modes of engaging with it. And they get into that a little bit in this podcast that we're about to hear, and I could talk more about it. I feel like it is worth hearing it through Bio's voice, and Geordie's done some writing on this as well, but they have a lot to say about the ways in which we might be invited to become what they call post-activists. And post-activism is not a sort of a giving up or a checking out. It is something that comes out of the world of post-humanism. These are sort of fancy words we're throwing around, but essentially what this means is that we are invited to really blur the boundary between what's human and what's non-human, and allow different sort of ways of thinking and assumptions and values to sort of enter into and take center stage as we think about what to do, specifically around climate change, but around lots of issues. Is it worth going into this a little bit more?
Maybe you could define or start to explain the link between this and spiritual companionship. Because I know Reverend Seifu has thought a lot and spoken about the contemplative activist, somebody who is a deep listener to what is, and I'm going to grossly paraphrase for him, but that one finds in contemplation a deep sense of love in the infinite, and that that love compels us into action in the world and to companion the world. One another, people, and also, you know, places, all living beings.
Yeah. I think that what Bio and Geordie invited me to think about during this retreat was that piece about the action in the world and allowing that to look really different than it has for me up to this point. And without getting into the weeds too much about it, because there's some really kind of complicated social theory ideas that we begin wading around in that I don't feel like I completely understand yet. But it is, I feel like what I was invited to do was to consider what it looks like to die well, and what it looks like to think about, like, how shall we all go crazy? What is this going to look like? It's no longer like, do we have to die? Are we definitely going to die? When are we going to die? Can we avoid going crazy? It is instead, how shall we do this? How can we do it not alone? And how, what will it look like? It's sort of an invitation to consider being a death doula to the earth and to communities and to ecosystems. And paradoxically, this is really not actually meant to be taken as a, like, checking out, as a no longer being actively engaged and involved. I feel like the heart of what Bio and Geordie and the Emergence Network is talking about is, like, a real flipping of the script and allowing things to sort of get, like, tossed up and tumbled around. I think I described it afterwards in some writing I did as, like, a snow globe that isn't just, like, shaken so that all of the flakes are swirling around, but instead it's like you take a hammer and you, like, bash open the snow globe and all the glass pieces crash and the water spills out and the pieces are all over the place. And then it's not even really about, like, putting them back together, but being like, I'm the snow globe and you're the snow globe and I'm the water and I'm the glass and I'm the flakes and so are you. And just this, like, altering of paradigms. For me, the invitation to die well, to accompany folks in death is a very, very weird and scary and radical invitation, and so it kind of fascinates me. I'm gonna try to find where I wrote some summary notes about what I thought the takeaways were. Experience the death of the earth. Don't deny it and don't run away from it, but experience it. We cannot solve it. We did a lot of thinking around the way in which solutions are framed and presented and some of the pitfalls of that and some of the invitations that emerge in reframing. Don't Do This Alone, Touch the Dead Thing, The Work Is Still Vital, Death Is Normal, It Is Not Tragic. And the touching of the dead thing is also one that has really stuck with me. At one point, Reverend Seifu and Bayo and Jordi and I were standing down by the water at this body of water that separates Whidbey Island from Camino Island. And I think we were doing sort of a centering practice before we went back in to keep on talking and working, and something floated up along the waves right next to our feet, and it was a giant dead jellyfish. And we all just kind of stood there for a minute. At first we were trying to figure out if it was alive or not, and then it was pretty clear that this was dead. This was this dead jellyfish, and I really wanted to pick it up. I wasn't sure if I could still get stung or if I just didn't touch the tentacles. But I just wanted to pick it up and touch it. I wanted to touch it. And then we went back in and we started talking about this metaphor of needing to sort of touch the thing that's dead in the world around us and that's dying, and not turn away and close our eyes, but sit down next to the decay and like put our hand in it. So that I think could be one invitation to spiritual companionship around what Bayo and Jordi are talking about.
Let's listen to the conversation that you had with Bayo and Jordi and Reverend Seifu. These are deep waters that we're swimming in contemplatively, and we don't shy away from them. And I know that, you know, if I'm reading a text that is heavy, I recommend this to students too. When you come across things that don't seem to make sense or that you don't understand, don't be frustrated by it. Don't shy away from it, but just continue on. So when you're reading a text, you find a word you don't understand or a phrase that doesn't make sense. It's a little different with a podcast because you can pause it or go back. But with a book, I'm like, don't read that same page 3 or 4 times. Like, if you don't understand it, just move on. And try to let the whole thing sort of weave its tail with you. And so when you're saying, I don't quite know how to define the emergence network, you just have to get to know it to understand it. And I think this conversation that we're having is one that we need to just spend some time with rather than trying to define it at a surface value. So spend some time with this conversation. And then, Frederica, I want to check back with you after this. We're going to do this in 2 parts. So the first part of your conversation will be this week's episode. I'll check in with you at the end of it, and then we'll continue it with next week's as well.
Sounds good. All right, here we go. Recorder is on. We are here in a car with our SDI Executive Director, Reverend Seifu Anil Singh Malaris. We have Bayo Akomolafe, our guest from Nigeria/Chennai, with us in the car. We've got Jordi Rosales in the back and myself, Rodriga Helmier. Maybe we'll just take a quick moment to share a little bit with our listeners about who we are and what we've been up to for the last 2 days. Jordi, would you like to start?
Sure. So my name is Jordi. I came up here from Oakland, California, Lone Land. And I work with the Emergence Network along with Bayo on curating spaces that ask difficult questions and hopefully invigorating and liberating questions that'll trouble ourselves with around working with imagination, clowning, and yeah, creating spaces where we can explore at this time how to be active in the world, how to make sense of the world. So we came up here to talk about a project with SDI and potential co-dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jordi. Mm-hmm. Bayo, some of our listeners might know you from the keynote presentation at the Seeking Connection conference in Bellevue last May. It's good to have you back in our midst. Can you share a little bit about who you are and what you're bringing into this car ride?
What I'm bringing into the car ride. The question about who I am, I'm still figuring out. That's a lifelong vocation, but the long and short of it, I guess, for now is I'm a traveler on a path of on a decolonial journey of revisiting the world and re-noticing the world as alive and entangling and entangled. And the Emergence Network, the organization that I share with my brother here, Jordy, and which we'll be sharing with, we're already sharing with SDI, is we feel invited into taking seriously the idea that the world is not mute, dead, and just a backdrop for human activity. And so... We've been diving in very inviting waters, literally.
Figuratively.
They both mean the same thing. According to a wise woman I once met. But it's great to be here, and we've had some very bursts of insights and light that speaks to a promising next step tomorrow. Yeah.
Steph, you want to say a word of introduction?
Yes. So it's been inspiring and rewarding to spend the last couple of days with Bio and Jordy and with you, Federica, kind of thinking outside the proverbial box. Kind of outside looking in at how we think about issues of social justice, of racism, of spiritual companionship, kind of across the board. And it's been a very fruitful and generative dialogue, and interspersed with moments of
cooking together.
Cooking and meditation. Yes. And just appreciating the beautiful location where we were on Whidbey Island. So I'm very grateful for our talks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, all.
Support for this podcast comes from Spiritual Companionship for Our Times, SDI's annual gathering of spiritual companions, happening in Santa Fe, New Mexico, April 23rd through 26th, 2020. Registrations are now open with super early bird pricing available through September 15th. We'll be celebrating SDI's 30th anniversary and charting the road ahead as we seek to welcome more and more people to the transformational gifts of spiritual companionship and to make this healing modality available to every person on the planet. Learn more now about our annual conference at www.sdievents.org. And now, here's part two of our conversation.
So maybe I'll invite us all to, as you feel moved, maybe share a highlight from the last 2 days together, either a moment or an idea or really anything that arose from our time together that you found meaningful.
I have one. So at one point in today's session, Bio shared an insight about, you know, we see because we are broken, or something else.
And I see, therefore I am broken.
And which I kind of twisted around to say, we are broken, therefore we see. And actually, I think that speaks to a lot of the work of spiritual companions, which is kind of breaking open our brokenness so that we might see more clearly past our traumas and our sufferings and our grief and our longings for communion. And that line, those two lines are going to stick with me because I think they really point to the essence of a lot of the work that we are trying to invite in is the sense of helping all of us see more clearly.
Yeah, I could follow up on that. Since we're on the subject of sight, I could take the route and speak about the which would be boring for most people listening, I guess, but I'm just going to do it anyway. briefly, and speak about how it is physiologically the case that sight breaks identity, that just to see, the process, the biological process of seeing is literally a breakdown of chemicals in our eyes, you know, in the retinal cells, and it's a hugely complicated process, so that there isn't a taking in of the world. I like to say that cameras don't take pictures, they make pictures. We don't just see the world, reflect it, we perform it. So sight is performance, knowing is performance, and embracing a world that is performative, that is not easily divided between the subject, the receiving subject, and the passive object, is terrifying, promising, liberating, expansive, and throw in another adjective there. But this feels like the invitation of the moment to humble ourselves, to come down to earth, to notice that we have never transcended it, we have never been in charge, we're not in control. We're hardly in control of ourselves, talk less of the world that stretches in infinite directions around us. So this feels like the underlying invitation of our conversation and our ongoing, the promise of our ongoing partnership to be in the trouble of performance and to witness the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Bio.
Caught a moment of that after, I believe it's yesterday, after a long conversation on just those topics and the lostness of even trying to articulate some of these questions and let alone how to respond to the questions. And you know, what do we do when our maps no longer take us where we want to go, but actually when you have to surrender the roadmap and let yourself be led, and let yourself be vulnerable to the questions, let them work on you. And I saw that happen for Frederica yesterday after a long and beautiful, invigorating conversation. Watched you get on a kayak and paddle yourself out into the fog. And the beautiful afternoon, clear water of the channel between Whidbey Island and Kamano Island. Mm. And just seeing you out there, a little blue shape, felt like, in a lot of ways, the appropriate response to some of these conversations. Is not always going to be a clear. It's not always going to be a clear answer. Actually, very rarely is that true. And so, how do we actually embody our wonder, embody our willingness to be taken by the current of these times, and actually enact it? Take ourselves out on the water. Bring the questions out to the land. Recognize that our allies are abounding all around us, and that we don't actually have to do it alone, let alone in a classroom or indoors. So I really appreciated, maybe you didn't realize what you were offering in that moment of sense making, but I found it very striking, and I'll take that image with me after this trip.
Maybe I'll toss out a question back to the group, because there's a number of things that we touched on that I would love to seek a little bit more clarity on. So a question for Bio and Giordi is, I've heard you two use this term now a couple times of saudade. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Mm-hmm. Is this a Portuguese word?
Brazilian Portuguese.
Brazilian Portuguese. Saudade, as I understand it, is this sort of nostalgic yearning for and longing for and recalling of something in the past that, that is no longer. Is that a one way to define that word?
Yes, right on the money.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how you understand saudade, this concept at work in the Emergence Network and in post-activism?
First, using the terminology of Brother Seifu and Neil here, first principles. So there's this beautiful concept of a rhizome that keeps coming up in my readings, and it's a very powerful concept that the world isn't still, right? The world is, nothing is independent. We move as a companion species. Mm-hmm. We move as part of our phones. Our phones are, we are the technologies to our phones, just as the phones are our technologies. And so this philosopher, this French philosopher, Deleuze, uses the idea of a rhizome to explain how things are heterogeneous. Nothing is produced singularly. When, for instance, an event produces grief or suffering, that's not the only thing it produces, because things don't appear independent of other things. It could produce other rhizomatic realities. So grief would appear with joy. Joy can appear with suffering. A bag in Walmart is already entangled with the suffering of a prisoner in China. So reality is very infractious and diffracted that way. I think one of the things that, and I'm going to situate speaking about saudade in the climate change discourse, that one of the things that is being produced is a lot of grief and a lot of a sense of loss. Noticing that the world, even if we had an elixir, this powerful solution that just takes away all the carbon from the atmosphere, that still wouldn't give us back the lives, the lands, the animals that are being lost at this moment, that are dying out at this moment. But modernity doesn't know how to account for these other realities. It focuses on reductionistic ideas, reductionistic concepts. So carbon is the problem. Taking away carbon is a solution. That's how it reasons. We are sensing, along with others around the world, that grief and loss and nostalgic longing, yearning for home, is also something to dwell with. And that's why I feel climate justice is too limited and narrow a concept to respond to. And that in the Anthropocene, we can respond to, other branches of the tree, of the rhizome. We can respond and dwell and build communities around grieving and loss. We can notice that that our inability to actually have a full picture about what's even happening is an invitation to some kind of activism. That confusion can be resourceful. Not finding one's way can be resourceful. And these are sites of power we don't know how to articulate yet. But this is also an invitation to stay with it. So I'd like to speak about not just climate justice, but climate saudade, climate ambido, climate play. Like, what do you do at the end of hope? What do you do when the right answer is no longer appropriate? What do you do when loss seems prolific and determined to continue reproducing itself? So this is speaking about realities that we can attune ourselves to, align ourselves to, using our brother's term here. Realities that invite us to stay with it, to stay with the trouble of it. And who knows, just by staying with it, we might enact inadvertently wiser worlds without a blueprint for it. Yeah.
Within all that, I would ask the question of what we even mean by home. What is home in the midst of climate chaos? What is home in the midst of all of these changes that we can't even yet anticipate or imagine are coming? And to actually ask again, what do we mean by that? Because I think if anything's been colonized at this point, it's our ideas of belonging and what... where we find our sense of selves, where we return to by the end of the day. And an important distinction to make between saudade and really what I would call, and many others, colonial nostalgia, which is this attachment to our ideas of home that have maybe persevered throughout the last centuries, but that are based in our attachments to things actually continuing as they are, whether they benefit that specific identity or not, ways that we're entangled with the very systems that we might try to change, that we might fight against, because they're comfortable, because they're familiar, and even if they're harmful to ourselves, there's often still this longing for what was once familiar. And so I think we're being asked at this time to redefine our sense of home and to actually surrender some of the homes that we've known and to actually let them die and to find home, find sanctuary in other ways that maybe aren't comfortable. And yeah, maybe home doesn't actually need to be comfortable, if that makes sense. And yeah, just a time of letting a lot that has shaped us and shaped our identities of how we move in the world, what it takes to let those frameworks decompose at this time. Some questions we're asking.
She already talks about how grieving is a revolutionary act. And I have this t-shirt that says, "Joy is an act of resistance." It's a reference to a poem title. And I really like thinking about things in that way. Like, how is joy an act of resistance? How does my joy participate in resisting structural evil? How does grief contribute to a revolutionary action? And that, I think, again, the invitation is to think of grief differently, to think about it as something that you lean into with others, that then reveals and exposes new understandings, different ways of orienting yourself in the world. And you get to a point where you almost kind of like welcome this in. And so at this point in the conversation, I remember thinking about that, the Rumi poem about the guest house. And it's one of Rumi's more popular poems, and I've got it here and I'd love to read it, because I feel like centuries ago, Rumi was sort of encapsulating what I think now the Emergence Network is inviting us to do. So folks might recognize this poem. It's well known. And it's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes. because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
Next week, we will release part two of these explorations and conversations. Thank you so much for listening. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.